Coming up on today's Locked On Bucks podcast, we are going to answer more of your voicemails. Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. Blue Chew, that's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. For instance, you know, a lot of guys talk a big game, but if you're a one-and-done kind of guy, Blue Chew can even help you get to round number two. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for all our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when using our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to try Blue Chew for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Forfeit the game before somebody else takes you out of the frame. Put your name to shame, cover up your face. You can't run the race, the pace is too fast, you just won't last.
What's up, and welcome back to the Locked On Bucs podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucksNation.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JArco underscore Bucks, at DH82 underscore Bucks, and at Bucks underscore Nation. David, before we get started, I owe our listeners an apology because we told them that JC Cornell was going to come on the show and he was going to be the official judge of our all-time Buccaneer teams. And in the midst of recording, my internet went out and completely destroyed the whole thing. And because of that, we did not have an episode. So for those of you that were upset that we did not have an episode come out on, what was that, Friday?
Yeah,
100% my fault. So I'm very sorry to all of you, but I wanted to get that out of the way because, yeah, that one's on me. David, I understand we have some voicemails from some listeners that want to ask us some things or give their thoughts on some things. So why don't we go ahead and dive right in? Who do we have up first?
First up, we have Jim in South Carolina, who actually is the – remember the voicemail we had the idea for the Throwback Thursdays? He's actually the one who called that in. It got cut off.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I want to make sure we did that. But, yeah, we've got another voicemail from him. Still talking about that 2002 divisional matchup against the 49ers, which is the last time the Buccaneers won a playoff game.
A home playoff game.
A home playoff game, yes, thank you. But yeah, so more from Jim. Here we go.
All right.
Hey, James. Hey, David. This is Jim in South Carolina. I'm not sure what happened when I called you guys the other day and left you the voicemail about the 2002 NFC divisional playoff game. That was me who called in. So not sure what happened there. Apologize that my name and where I'm from didn't come out. But just wanted to pass that on to you. Listen to obviously that podcast that you guys did about now using that idea and use it for Throwback Thursday, which is great. I've got another idea for you guys, but I'll give you another call in regards to that. The thing that I remember when I first started watching that game was at the very beginning, you see the 49ers with the ball, and who is the starting quarterback for the 49ers that day? You guys might remember. Some fans out there probably have to think about it. It was going to be future Buccaneer quarterback Jeff Garcia was behind center that day. So it was cool watching him play back then and then remembering that later on, a few years later, he became the Bucs quarterback for a couple of years. So that was really cool. And also, Wanted to pass out to our to David. Hey, man, 19 years military, cool. I did 22 years active duty Air Force. I know where you're at when you say, man, one more year and I'm done. It's well worth it. Take it from me. It's well worth it. So I will talk to you guys later. Have a good one. And as always, go Bucks.
All right, Jim, thank you for the phone call. Much appreciated. And thank you for your service. My grandfather was actually career Air Force, served in World War II, and then ended up working the rest of his life at Wright-Patt Air Force Base here in Ohio. So thank you for your service. It's much appreciated. The Air Force is near and dear to my heart. Yeah, it's funny to go back and look at that that 2002 divisional round because, yeah, Jeff Garcia was – he ended up being one of my favorite players for the Buccaneers when he came here. And, yeah, he was kind of the perfect quarterback for John Gruden. And I remember finding out when Jeff Garcia was going to be the guy because earlier that day, or at least, you know, it was reported earlier that day that the Buccaneers had traded – for Jake Plummer, and then Plummer opted to retire rather than continue to play for the Bucs. Now, I don't know if that had anything to do with the Buccaneers themselves or just coincidental that Plummer had figured, you know what, I think my time is up anyway. And then the Bucs ended up making the move to get Jeff Garcia. But, yeah, man, I loved Jeff Garcia with the Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah. I remember very well. I had very high hopes for Jeff Garcia in Tampa. Definitely enjoyed his time. I think Jake Plummer, I remember because I was obviously, again, I was younger, but I think Jake Plummer, that was more about his ties to Colorado than it was anything else. I don't think at that point in time he was interested in moving and living elsewhere and all that. But
yeah, 'cause he was towards the end of his career at that point.
Right. As far as the Air Force thing, it's cool. Yeah, actually, so funny enough, James. Wright-Patterson is where I took my wife after we got married to get her ID card. Her
military. Oh, really?
Yeah, so cool stuff. And then, Jim, yeah, thanks for everything you've done, of course. As a military working dog handler, we work joint throughout the branches very often. I mean, our job is pretty much the same no matter what branch of the military you're in. That's kind of the fun part about being a dog handler. And as a kennel master in Iraq, I had Air Force handlers, Navy handlers. Didn't have any Marines, but I worked with some Marines and then Army handlers, of course. And the Air Force handlers are some of the best ones I have. So I have a love for all the branches of the military. But it actually reminded me, too, because every branch, you know, pokes fun at each other. It's most of the time it's good-natured fun. Some people take it overboard and get angry about it. But Brent actually had a caller on one of their live instant casts over there, the pewter cast, and he identified himself as being Air Force. I can't remember who it was specifically, but I texted him in the middle of the phone call and said, ask him if he gets offended by being called a Zoomie. Which is what the other branches lovingly refer to Air Force people as. They have their fun nicknames for us as well. And the caller, I don't know he got offended, but he definitely threw back. He's like, I don't know, ask him if he minds being called this, because Brent was like, am I going to piss this guy off? And I was like, no, man, you should be okay. I don't think he was too offended by it. But just fun stuff. I appreciate your call as always and sharing the memories. And, yeah, good stuff. I'm looking forward to the episode. We've already got a couple of voicemails for the throwback to the last time the Buccaneers were in the playoffs. And yeah, it should be a fun episode. So we'll see. And then we did get the other voicemail for the other show idea. And we're not going to move on that just yet. We want to see if the throwback Thursday thing kind of sticks. But yeah, we definitely appreciate the input, of course. And we're definitely saving it and seeing if we can fire that bad boy off at a later date.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, David, let's move on to caller numero dos.
Hey, James and David, it's Chef Aaron calling you. Yeah, a little topic popped into my mind. I've kind of been putting it on social media, like on Twitter and Facebook, in regards to it, because these two players are probably two of the best at their positions, and one is definitely probably the best at his position. And they both come from the Jaguars. So my question to you, if you had to choose, because obviously we've had trouble on our defense when it comes to the secondary and our pass rush in recent years, who would you choose and why? Jalen Ramsey or Yannick Ngakoue? It's been, from what I've seen, a bit of 50-50, more so leading, I think, Yannick, obviously for obvious reasons due to the pass rush, been our biggest Achilles heel or our biggest problem child, so to speak. But in my opinion, I would take Jalen Ramsey due to the fact that you can have one side of your football, you have one side of your defense locked down. That goes a long way, and you can always find pass rushers, even though we've had a notorious problem with finding them. I think it may just be the coaching problem has been the reason why for the pass rush. But, yeah, just wanted to get your guys' thoughts, and go Bucks.
All right. Chef, great to hear from you, as always. David, you want to take this one first, or you want me to go?
Sure, I can tackle this one. So, I love both players, first of all, at least talent-wise. Jalen definitely seems to have more of a volatile personality than Yannick does. But I don't, from everything I've heard, from everything that I think I know, I don't think it's really too bad. Like not something you can deal with as a coaching staff, as a locker room. That being said, I would take Yannick. If I had the choice between the two, I would take Yannick. And, you know, I don't want to get too deep into context and all that other stuff, because there's obviously multiple different ways that this type of thing can take form if it were to happen, if it were ever to happen. But yeah, if I had a choice between the two, just off the cuff, I would take Yannick. For one reason, obviously the playmaking ability, and I mean, you can never have enough linebackers or, you know, pass rushers, defensive ends, anything. Your front seven is more important than your backboard. And I know, like, I get the theory of, you know, securing one side of the ball, but honestly, I think those days are over. I think those days are kind of dead. I don't think that a shutdown corner really gives your defense as much of an advantage as it used to back in the days of, like, Deion and all that stuff. I think that offenses today are much more skilled at using the entire field. And it's a little ironic. So recently SB Nation, I can't remember right now who wrote the article for SB Nation, but one of the writers for SB Nation ranked every NFL team's tight end groups. And it's important to remember it's groups, because we're not talking just Travis Kelce, not just Zach Ertz. We're talking the entirety of the roster. And the Buccaneers landed fifth. And I remember, and I was writing up, you know, a little reaction piece to it for the site. And I put in a line there saying, you know, OJ Howard and Cam Brate give the Buccaneers something that's very rare in the NFL. And that is legit receiving, like dangerous receiving options at the tight end position. And I kind of paused them and I was like, wait a second, is that really true? So I went back through the list of tight ends from last year. I kind of just went through the stat chart and kind of looked, just scrolling down the list of names. And man, there are a lot of dangerous receiving tight ends in the National Football League now. Two more, if not more, just got added this year through the draft. So it really is not as rare as it kind of felt like it might have been and it used to be. And then you look at running backs. Obviously, most teams have a two-back set now. You got one that catches, one that runs. You got guys like Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, who do both. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the NFL football field is divided in half anymore coming from a defensive standpoint. I think, like, honestly, it's divided in eighths. You got like your short four and your deep four. So having a shutdown corner really in today's NFL only secures one eighth, maybe a quarter. If you want to stretch it, maybe call it a quarter of your defense, of your pass defense. Whereas a pass rusher who can also make early penetration on rundowns impacts so much more. So no shade to Jalen Ramsey, but yeah, give me Yannick Ngakoue all day. That wasn't supposed to rhyme, so I'm going to edit that so that it doesn't rhyme.
It should rhyme. Rhyming is fantastic. I'm going to agree with everything that you said for all the reasons that you said. And then my little cherry on top is going to be I would want Yannick over Ramsey, if nothing else, just despite the Florida State heathens.
You really have it out for the Florida State folks.
They're every bit as obnoxious as Ohio State fans. Both of which are more obnoxious than Yankees fans. So that kind of gives you the scale.
Oh, no, sir.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, let's move on to caller number three.
Hey, guys. My name is Nate. I'm from Lebanon, PA, near Harrisburg, right in the middle of Pennsylvania. I love your guys' show. I appreciate it. I'm pretty lonely up here. So you guys give me a lot of great content to listen to on my commute. So I really love it. But I was thinking about something, you know, over the weekend here, AD went to the Lakers, and, you know, I've heard some conversations on other podcasts about just how GMs really look to be creative and looking at each other even across leagues here about how they're building their teams. So I was just wondering if you guys really on this fact of rebuilding or reloading, and if you guys are, I know it's kind of throwing it back a little bit, but maybe how you feel maybe being in a situation kind of like the Raiders where they're really stockpiling picks for the future, or if you guys would really be interested here in the future, especially with, you know, James's contract coming up and, you know, those kinds of other things going on, if you guys would maybe more willing to trade for a star or something along those lines. So I know the NFL is a salary cap league, so it's a little bit different maybe than some other teams, you know, in other sports. But just wondering what your guys' thoughts are. Really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much. And, you know, fire the cannon. Thanks. Bye.
Nate, thank you so much for the call. And before I dive into this, you said you were located near Harrisburg. So quick personal story. I used to absolutely despise the city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, back when I was a wee little lad. Strictly because growing up, my family always had tickets to a professional indoor soccer team called the Dayton Dynamo. Their big rival, one of their big rivals, was the Harrisburg Heat. So, Nate, if you are old enough to have any recollection of the Harrisburg Heat of the National Professional Soccer League, please let me know in your next call, because I would really be interested to hear if you had ever gone to any of those games. Now, anyway, to answer your question, this is a win now situation for the Bucs. Jameis has to prove that he's worth the kind of long-term extension that quarterbacks are getting right now. And in order to prove that, he has to have a really, really good season. Otherwise, you're looking at a potential franchise tag or, you know, a shorter-term deal, which isn't exactly what you want to deal with if you believe you have a franchise quarterback. Bruce Arians has said numerous times that they're not rebuilding, they're reloading. Because there is a lot of talent on this team. So, you know, I don't think they're thinking about the future a whole heck of a lot. They have to make a splash, and they have to win games right now in 2019. Or, you know, you may be looking for a new GM. You may see Bruce Arians be a one and done as a head coach, slide into that front office role, take over as GM because he's got his future head coach in waiting in Byron Leftwich there. So I don't know. That's a very small percent chance, but the Bucks have to win. So I'm not viewing this team as a rebuild at all. Obviously they still have to plan for the future, but for right now, they're not making moves in 2019 to plan for, you know, success in 2020 and 2021 and kind of waving the white flag already on this season. They have to win, or at the very least, they have to be extremely competitive this year, or you know, it's going to be another long, frustrating offseason.
So right off the bat, I want to thank Nate for opening the door for me to talk about basketball, because I am a basketball fan. However, there's not even an NBA team in Tampa or in St. Petersburg or in Montreal for me to talk about when talking about the Bucks. So this is a great opportunity for me. I'm really looking forward to this. Two things happened. So first of all, I love aggressive general managers. I love aggressive franchises. I love teams that just want to go out and win. You look at the New York Yankees, you know, starting under Steinbrenner and all that stuff. You look at what the Red Sox do. You look at even teams like the Cubs. The Lakers trade for Anthony Davis reeks of desperation. Just absolutely reeks of desperation. They gave up way too much. However, here's why they did it. The worst thing that could ever happen to the 2019 offseason Los Angeles Lakers is Paul George going to Oklahoma City and Kawhi Leonard going to Toronto. And I know this isn't a basketball podcast, but bear with me. Paul George goes to Oklahoma City. They don't win a championship or anything like that. Everybody pretty much assumes the dude is from Southern California, so they pretty much assume he's going to be a Laker the very next year. He says, you know what? I love the atmosphere. I love the team. I love the city. I love the fans. I'm good. I'm staying. So he's in OKC. Kawhi. The assumption was that Kawhi wanted to go to LA. I don't know if it was ever confirmed. I don't get too deep into it just because I don't cover basketball. But I know that there were speculation out there, rumors or opinions that he wanted to go to LA, wanted to play with the Lakers because of the market, the branding, all that stuff. The Lakers don't jump. They say, we're not jumping high enough. Or the Spurs just say, you know what, we're not helping the Lakers. I don't know how it dismantled, but it doesn't work out. He goes to Toronto. I remember when that trade happened. Everybody's like, oh, he's going to Toronto for a year, and then he's going to sign with LA the next year. the question was, is it going to be the Clippers or the Lakers? But look at what has happened. And now, is Kawhi actually going to leave Toronto?
Yes.
Nobody knows. Now, I still think he does. Yeah, I agree. I still think he does leave Toronto. But the door is now open for a possibility that Kawhi Leonard stays in Toronto after everything that happened, that he ends up staying in Toronto. The Lakers can't let that happen again. So they had to jump for Anthony Davis. They had to do what they did because they can't let Davis get traded to, I don't know, Portland, Denver, you know, any of these other markets. And then everybody says, oh, that's a 1 year. Then he'll be in LA the next year, because that might not actually happen. You might end up with Paul George in Oklahoma City, Anthony Davis in Portland, and Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, and everybody who thought that all these big teams were going to stick. And next thing you know, Klay Thompson's in Orlando and the world has just gone crazy. I love it. However, football is totally different than basketball. You cannot plug and play players in the NFL in football the way that you can in basketball or even in a baseball lineup. In a baseball lineup, the New York Yankees can go out and buy a whole new roster, come in, and they're good to go. You can't do that in the NFL. So that's the reason I think it doesn't happen, and I understand that. That being said, I feel like you have to always be either buying or selling. You can't ever look at your team and say, we just are what we are and we're good the way that we are. You always have to be either buying or selling. And I think that's where teams, like you look at the Los Angeles Rams, like they did a lot of good things last year and I applaud them for it. But this year they didn't buy, they didn't sell. They're like, we're good with what we got. We're just going to add some youth. We're going to add some new pieces here and there. So like last year they came in as buyers and they bought and they bought and they bought and it worked. They took them to the Super Bowl. This year they're like, we've got the nucleus. We've got the level. We've got what we want. We're sticking with what we have. We're staying. It's like, you know, like you're holding at 15 at the blackjack table. And I think that's a really, really dangerous thing to do. You look at the New England Patriots, a lot of teams look at them. They're like, oh, that's a very vanilla team. You don't ever really hear splash stuff. That team is constantly wheeling and dealing. And Bucks fans really showed a lot of their intelligence this last offseason talking about compensatory draft picks. That is where the New England Patriots are working the market. Like they may not be out there in the stock market, you know, in New York City ringing the bell, but they're working that NASDAQ and they're flexing that thing, they're massaging that thing, and they're getting returns every single year on that smaller market, and they're turning it into big things for their franchise. You've always got to be buying or selling. It's dangerous to be standing pat, I think, in the NFL. And this year, the Buccaneers were buyers. What they bought was a whole new coaching staff. They sold a little bit of their assets to bring in a whole new management team, and that's still buying. It's not buying in the same level that we're kind of talking about here, but if buying there works this year, then hopefully next year we talked about this a little bit in a previous episode, James, with all these one-year deals. You get 10 to 12 one-year deals, you have a good season, four or five of those guys go out and sign 3 or 4 year contracts, and now you're going to get a return. That's what the Patriots are really good at, is turning guys who stay for a year or two and turning them into stars, and then they get big deals somewhere else, and then they bring in a guy behind them on the tail end to just continue replenishing their stock. I kind of look at it like this. The NFL is a business, right? We talk about football being a business all the time. What do businesses do with their stock on their shelves? They move them and they rotate them and they always have something waiting in the wind. And you look at seasonal items, right? You talk about like fruits and vegetables and all that crap. All those things have seasons. And that's how the Patriots kind of look at it. They're like, Rob Gronkowski, you know what I mean? Like you're the fruit of the month right now, but sooner or later you're gonna start to ripen. You're gonna start to spoil a little bit. We need to be ready to swoop in and bring the next hot item behind you so that our stock always looks nice and fresh. Now Rob kind of pulled the rug under them, left earlier than they expected him to, so they're knocked back on their heels a little bit there. But if you look at the Patriots' history, that's kind of what they do. They're like, Willie McGinnis, you're sexy, you're nice, you do a lot of good things for us, and then as soon as you start to see some of those ripe spots show up, They come behind him like, oh, okay, let's get the next item ready. And then before it starts to go bad and before it starts to spoil, they go ahead and ship that out and they bring that new product up to the front. And then the next thing you know, their storefront still looks sexy. So I don't know. That's kind of the way I look at it. Kind of a complicated way of talking about it. I hope it makes sense. It made sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, we're starting to get up against the clock here. So let's go ahead and jump over to the next call.
What's up, guys? This is Matt from Morven, Georgia. I know I've been kind of quiet and haven't called in a while, but I still love the show, still hate the intro. Linkin Park sucks. Go Bucks. But anyway, what's got me calling in today is I just watched the interview of Gerald McCoy and Shannon Sharp on Undisputed, and I got to be honest,
It's kind of embarrassing just watching it. As Gerald McCoy self-proclaims in that interview that, you know, he's a pillar of that team and, you know, a representation of the Bucks over the last several years. And, if he wants to know why he's not a Buck anymore, all he needs to do is watch his own interview. I mean, he gets up there and whines about the Bucks didn't talk to me, you know, and then he whines about they gave my number away, you know, and then he goes on to talk about being a vegan and I get my protein from your protein's protein. Come on, man. This is exactly why you're not here anymore. Cause you know, you get up there and sound like that. And Shannon Sharp pretty much punks him out two or three times in that. And it's pretty funny. But like I said, kind of embarrassing as a Buck. But, you know, I totally support giving Sue his number. I hope Sue balls out next to Vea and he brings a grittiness back to this team where, you know, we get back to that old school Bucks type defense. But let me know your thoughts. Go Bucks.
All right, Matt, appreciate the phone call, but I'm going to say this. Any more Linkin Park slander and your voicemails are not getting on the show anymore.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
I'll play them twice.
You'll find a new co-host.
Matt will be my co-host.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, look, for those that saw Gerald McCoy on Undisputed, look, it was a bad look. It really was. It doesn't matter what side of the whole McCoy, you know, versus Buccaneers debate you were on. Nobody came out of that looking good. If you are to take McCoy's comments at face value and assume that he never got a phone call and he never got a meeting and this and that and the other thing, the Buccaneers come off looking really, really bad. I don't believe that is actually the case. But at the end of the day, Gerald McCoy came off looking like a petulant child. And, you know, he can whine about his number being given away all he wants. And, yes, Gerald McCoy is third all-time on the team in sacks. But he was not Warren Sapp. He was not Derek Brooks. He was not John Lynch. He was not Leroy Selman or Rondé Barber or Mike Allstott or Jimmy Giles or Paul Gruber or any of those other guys whose numbers have been left alone. He wasn't the kind of guy that took over a game the way all those other players were. And the way that McCoy conducted himself, if Undisputed is any resemblance of how he conducted himself within one Buck place, whether it was with coaches, past or present, front office, past or present, anything like that, then he got all the respect he earned because he came off as someone who thought that he was more important than anyone else. He came off looking like an egotistical, petulant child. That's the best way I can put it. And David, we had Styles G. White on the podcast last week, and he made a reference to a rookie who came in, you know, acting like he was already Derek Brooks and already deserved that special treatment. Well, doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out who he's talking about. So if he walked in the door with that attitude, well, that same door hit him on the butt on his way out and his number 93 is on someone else. That's my take on it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, nobody looked good after that interview. And the last thing I'll say about it, Dave, before I turn it over to you, is it's kind of funny that if you go to some Panthers fan groups, they're already talking about, you know, Gerald McCoy's a clown and, you know, who does he think he is? And this, that, and the other thing, they're already seeing right through this facade.
With the Gerald McCoy thing on Undisputed, there's two pieces of this. There is who looks good or who looks bad in the way this whole thing went down. And I'll address that real quick. I don't think anybody looks good or bad with the whole, with the way the whole thing came down. And that's going to kind of bleed into my comments about his appearance by itself. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have zero responsibility to Gerald McCoy to release him before free agency, during free agency, before the draft, during the draft, after the draft. They have no obligation to release him before they feel it's time to release him, if they're, if they are in fact going to release him. That's just the truth of the matter. I don't know, like, if there's a problem with that process, then it's something that needs to be taken up in the next collective bargaining agreement, and hearing some of the early talks on what's being negotiated in the collective bargaining agreement when a team releases a player from a contract is not one of those items. So it doesn't appear that there's enough players, enough player reps complaining about that system to make it a notable topic. So the fact that they waited to release him doesn't really have an impact to me on whether or not the Buccaneers handled the situation well or whether they didn't handle it well. The bottom line is the people involved handled it, unless we find out otherwise, people involved handled it the best way they felt they could and should for the betterment of the team for the 2019 NFL season. And that's the bottom line. Now, if we find out later in a memoir or in a, like, a candid post-retirement interview that, no, we held on to Gerald, you know, until early June just to stick it to him because we didn't like his personality. Okay, now you're just being petty. But at the end of the day, the Buccaneers' job, the job of Jason Light, the job of the Glazers, the job of every person in a position, an administrative position, whether it's balancing the books or what have you, their responsibility is to do what's best for the organization, not to do what's best for Gerald McCoy, not to do what's best for Jameis Winston, not to do what's best for Mike Evans. Their job is to do what's best for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's what they're there to do, right? Like, we had Jill on the show who runs their social media coverage. Her job is not to make Jameis Winston's image better. That is not her job. Her job is to help the Buccaneers have a strong social media platform that reaches out to the fans and incites reactions. And I think she's doing a pretty damn good job of it. So there's that part of it. So, because I know there's some people who think the Buccaneers botched up handling Gerald. I don't think they botched anything. And here's, and this leads into the part though of what we don't know, but we do know from Gerald's appearance on Undisputed. What Gerald told us is what Gerald wanted to tell us. What Gerald didn't tell us, okay, is what they talked about in that conversation. They said that he did have. I understand he went through the whole not getting phone calls and Jason didn't call me and the Glazers didn't, and okay, but he did have a conversation. But he didn't say what happened in that conversation. That's what I want to know. What happened in that conversation? Then Shannon, I believe, asked him about the whole taking a pay cut or not taking a pay cut. And Gerald was like, yeah, you know, they brought an offer to the table, but nah. Okay, there's no details in that, guys. None whatsoever. What did the Buccaneers ask him to do? Because there's a conversation happening there. And I don't know, maybe it didn't happen with Jason Light. I don't, I mean, without being inside the inner workings of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, contracts are not Bruce Arians' job. Those are Jason Light's job. And in tandem with some other people as well, obviously. I find it hard to believe that contract conversations were had without Jason Light being part of that conversation. Now, what Gerald might be talking about is he didn't directly talk to Jason, i.e. Jason talked to his agent, but welcome to the NFL. That's how this works. You don't talk to the player about how much money we're going to, like, and Ndamukong Suh is in Paris tasting wine, getting engaged while his contract details are being worked out in Tampa, Florida. That's standard business practice. Maybe on occasion you will have a conversation with the player, probably more towards the end, but I mean, settling on the major pieces, the money per year, the bonus structures and all that stuff, from my understanding, that's mostly going to be done between agent and GM and, you know, other administrators. So that's not really news. And if Gerald McCoy got approached with a pay cut and just flat out said no, what does Jason have to call you for? What reason does he have to call you? He's trying to build a roster. He's trying to build a competitive roster to take care of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he went to your agent and he said, hey, we love Gerald. We want him to stay. We want his picture to stay on the side of the building and the programs, all this stuff. We don't want him to leave, but we need him to take a pay cut for the betterment of the team. Not a restructuring, which might have struck a nerve. We don't want to restructure a la Mike Evans. We want him to get less money. And Gerald said, nah, not happening. I'm Gerald McCoy. I've been here for 9 years. I've been the best part of most of your bad teams. I deserve the money that I'm getting for time served and for what I'm going to do for you in the future. And if that's the way he feels, more power to him. Right? We had this conversation with Quan. Quan was coming off an ACL tear. Jason Light, Bruce Arians, whoever else is involved is probably looking at that saying, off-ball linebacker coming off of an ACL who already had a little bit of liability problems in pass coverage, and we're going to ask him to do more of that. Probably not somebody we want to dump a whole lot of money on. Quan's probably looking at it saying, yo, I was a mid to late round draft pick playing on mid to late round draft money as a starter, as a captain on this team. I deserve to be paid for what I've already done. And they're both correct. So if Gerald McCoy says, I deserve the money you promised me when I was a marquee player, when I was a captain, because I put in that time, yes. If Jason Light said, Gerald, we appreciate everything you did. However, we don't feel like you deserve the same amount of money moving forward because of what you've done this last year or maybe two, and what we feel like you're going to do moving forward. Yes, both are correct. That it is possible for both of those things to be correct, as much as people don't want to hear it. But again, here's the problem. We're getting one side of the story. And the side of the story we're getting from Gerald McCoy is everything he feels like he didn't get, that he deserved, that he wanted, that it's all Gerald McCoy. The Buccaneers aren't saying anything. And I don't think the Buccaneers are going to say anything. But
they don't need to.
No, and absolutely, which is why I don't think they will. But here's the thing. What Gerald McCoy is not telling you, what happened in that one conversation he says he had, what happened in the contract renegotiation attempts the Buccaneers made, he's not telling you those details for a reason. I'm going to let you fill in those blanks. But when you're talking about media awareness, when you're talking about being a savvy listener to people who are delivering a message, and make no mistake about it, Gerald McCoy did not go on Undisputed just because it happened. Gerald McCoy went on Undisputed because he had a message, and he delivered his message. But in messages, especially messages coming from players who have been spurned, especially coming from players who are in the center of controversy, whatever you call it, what is left out is oftentimes just as important as what is not left out. This goes back to the mutually agreed to part ways. They mutually agreed to part ways. This was not a Buccaneer decision. This was a Buccaneers and Gerald McCoy decision. And my bet is it was, hey, let's just move on. Let's make a clean break. Let's all move on with our lives. But what Gerald has shown now is that he doesn't have the ability to do that, because we had a voicemail not too long ago saying they're sick of the Gerald McCoy talk. James, you and I both said we're sick of talking about Gerald McCoy, and I'm sick of doing it right now, right here, as I'm ranting about this. But you know what? If he's going to keep talking about the Bucs, we're going to have to keep talking about him. And I'm trying to be respectful because the dude has been playing the NFL for a long time. He's accomplished a whole lot of things. He's been to a lot of Pro Bowls. He did a lot of good things for the Bucs. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed every moment of every year I played Madden. I never traded him or cut him. He stayed on the team. But, bro, move on. Let it go. It's over. You're in Carolina. You want revenge? Sack Jameis. There's your revenge. Everything you're doing out here is not revenge because nobody cares. Jason is not sitting in his office saying, man, Gerald went on Undisputed and said, we didn't talk. Now my year is over. That's not happening. That is not happening. Bruce is not sitting back saying, man, Gerald McCoy said, I don't know him. Guess what? Bruce knows enough to know that he made a decision that he feels is right for the team moving forward. I honestly believe Bruce's comments were a challenge. This dude thinks he's an all-time Buck. This dude thinks he's a franchise great. This dude thinks he deserves to be in the Ring of Honor. If you want your name in big, bold letters on the edge of a stadium, you are not a dude that throws a fit, runs and tucks his tail when your head coach challenges you to be better. You are a dude who gets challenged to be better by their head coach and says, thanks, coach. I appreciate you staying on me even though I'm a vet, even though I'm established, even though I'm this, even though I'm that. I appreciate that because you're trying to make me better. Bill Belichick will come out and say, Tom Brady sucked today. Tom Brady should have thrown that pick. Bill Belichick will do that. And Tom Brady will never get up there and say, man, Bill Belichick doesn't know what he's talking about. You know what I'm saying? That is not a leader. That is not a warrior. That's a petulant child. That's what he looked like. Now, I'm not saying that Gerald McCoy is a petulant child, but what I saw on Undisputed was a very bitter, broken up with X. You just look sad, bro. That's it. I hope this is the last time we talk about Gerald.
You and me both. Well, up until the week two preview. Because I'm sure our friend Bill over at Locked On Panthers is going to want to talk all about Gerald McCoy. Yeah, I have nothing else to add. I'm done talking about the old 93.
And I just figured out. Oh, I didn't even talk about that. But I just hit me what our outro is going to be. So make sure you stay tuned for that. 93. Listen, the number 93 does not belong to Gerald McCoy. It belongs to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can say, we are going to give you that number, like they've done with Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp. They've said, that number belongs to that name. It will never be worn again by another name because it belongs to that name. Only the Buccaneers can do that. Gerald McCoy does not own crap. As soon as he left the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that number belonged to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They can do whatever they want with it. So nobody gave Gerald McCoy's number to anybody. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers had an open roster number, signed a player who said, hey, that parking spot's open. I think I'll park there. That's it. That's all I have to say about the number.
All right. And I think, David, that'll do it for this episode. All right. Well, please make sure you're checking out everything going on over at BucksNation.com. Send us your voicemails to 813-444-5841. And make sure you're getting those Throwback Thursday voicemails in on what topic, David?
The last time the Tampa Bay Buccaneers made the NFL playoffs.
Which would have been in 2007 when they played the New York Football Giants. But if you have any questions or show suggestions, please also feel free to give us a call at 813-444-5841 and make sure to let Matt from Morven, Georgia know how much you love Lincoln Park. Make sure you're following along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JArco_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. We would like to thank each and every one of you for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.
I got no feelings to go. I swear I had it up to here. I got no feelings to go. I mean, for real, how you feel? Your 2 cents if it ain't going towards the bill. Yeah, and every day I wake up celebrating. Why? Because I just dodged a bullet from a crazy person. I stuck to my guns. That's what made me rich. That's what put me on. That's what got me here. That's what made me this. And then another one text me, yo, at next. And I'ma text yo at back like I don't with you. You little stupid and wow. Game with you. You little dumb and game with you. I got a million trillion things I'd rather do than to be with you. Little stupid and I don't give a look, I don't give a about you or anything that you do. Don't give a about you or anything that you do. Got a million things on my mind.